Hello, welcome to the second hour of the reading of the Arizona Republic for Sunday, March 30th, 2025. I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with Sunsounds of Arizona. We begin the second hour by reading the obituaries. Today's list includes the following names: Elsie Ann Andrade, Mary Evelyn Bailey, Sherry Lee Bigley, Wallace Dean Britton, Robert Wayne Brown, Ronald G. Buhner, Valerie May Hipman Call, Mary Lou Diaz, Harry Lee Ediger, Laura R. Grafman, Robert Hunt, Robert Lee Knox, Emily Navarro Lavis, James E. Mason, Elizabeth Miller, known as Betty, Sylvester Modesti, Dr. Lawrence Beckwith Nielsen, M.D., Jack Lee Noblet, Alice Okoneski, Barbara Lynn Hamilton Osterhout, Joelle Peluso, Margaret Quinn, known as Penny, Barbara Ann Sharp Schroeder Walkowiak, Dr. Herb C. Simonson, George Charles Solman, Loretta M. Tam, and Betty Jane Welton. Sunsounds of Arizona extends its condolences to the families and friends of the people listed in today's obituaries. And now we'll turn to the economy section of the paper. The first article was written by Russ Wiles, who's a columnist for the Arizona Republic. It's entitled, "Don't Ignore the Psychological Aspects of Retirement." Legions of federal workers now are pondering a crash course in retirement planning under President Trump's drive to slim down the government. Resignation offers, spearheaded by the Department of Government Efficiency, were extended to more than 2 million federal employees, and tens of thousands have accepted. It's not yet clear how many of those will turn it into a chance to retire soon, but many might not find it so easy to transition away from permanent employment, especially when they assumed that retirement was still 5 or 10 years away. Elizabeth Zelenka Parsons took a similar leap years ago when she relinquished her job as a Wall Street attorney in New York, working 80-hour weeks to raise what were her then two young children, and she moved to Tucson. Quote, "I can truly say I wandered in the desert for 3 years. I felt like I had lost my identity and life structure." Unquote. In her case, the transition was not permanent, as she reinvented herself and returned to employment as a retirement transition expert. A whole industry of financial advisors have emerged to help make sure that people can afford to retire. But Zelenka Parsons, who is the author of the new book, quote, "Encore, A High Achiever's Guide to Thriving in Retirement," unquote, well, she said it's also important to consider the softer issues of retirement. And these include examining one's self-identity, structuring new schedules, expanding their social circles, and, in short, continuing to grow. She offers the following tips to make the transition less painful and more fulfilling, whether for federal workers now considering this change or the millions of other Americans who already have dealt with it or will confront it eventually. With the end of a fulfilling career can come emotions tied to the loss of purpose and community and routine and professional identity. Zelenka Parsons said these are normal feelings, and she added that it's wise to confront them by writing about those changes or talking things out, especially with others who are going through similar changes. Ignoring or suppressing the emotional fallout is not wise. She advises, quote, "Don't let it harden into permanent bitterness," unquote. The adjustment to retirement can be difficult for anyone. It's even more disruptive when it comes with little notice, as many federal employees are finding out now. The transition can put stress on your finances, upend your routine, sever your social connections, and terminate areas of personal interest, including projects that you might have been pursuing at work. Zelenka Parsons suggests trying to frame the change as a bridge to a new life, rather than a cliff that ends the old one. For many people, careers and occupations are intertwined with a sense of self-worth. This is especially true of many professionals. But retirees, with more time on their hands, now have opportunities to expand on other roles or pursue new ones and to engage with other people. Zelenka said, quote, "As human beings, we like to belong to groups. Work on understanding how you now fit in the world," unquote. Now, nobody likes everything about being employed, so try to identify those aspects that you valued most, such as teamwork or social recognition or pursuing valuable objectives. Zelenka said, quote, "We really need to feel we are working on worthy goals," unquote. And employment often supplies those. But there are other ways to generate a sense of purpose, contributions, and connections. And as you pursue hobbies or personal interest, you will meet other individuals who share similar passions. Retirement doesn't need to be viewed simply as an end, as it also can represent a new beginning. Zelenka said the word retirement suggests a withdrawal of no sense of forward motion. Drop the notion that you're pulling away or are retreating into a smaller life. Rather, view it as springing into a future that could be better, unquote. So it's important to be able to afford a comfortable lifestyle in retirement, a goal that many Americans still need to work on. But she also suggests preparing in other ways, such as setting structure to your days and weeks and finding fresh challenges, including new means of intellectual stimulation and social connections. This also might be the time to reactivate dormant friendships from people you knew years or decades ago, including those who also might be retired. With the loss of schedules and deadlines mandated by employment, it's important to design new routines and habits and metrics to measure the progress in life. It is an opportunity to ponder what a perfect day might look like. She said, quote, "Give yourself permission to imagine that you're taking a sabbatical, that you're pushing the pause button," unquote. Regular volunteering or even a part-time job might help to provide structure for your free time, along with hobbies and the like. She said, quote, "I don't think most people want 365 Saturdays in a row," unquote. And as you let go of the past, remain open to what might be possible in the future. Zelenka said, quote, "Let it be more exciting than scary." And she went on and said, "Try not to default into old habits and routines that you developed in order to accommodate a work schedule," unquote. Put yourself, if necessary, to get out and about, as social interactions are critical to a successful retirement. She said, quote, "Isolation will take you in the opposite direction," unquote. And as for finances, many people will struggle to afford a comfortable retirement lifestyle. Ways to address this challenge include working a bit longer than planned, investing regularly in 401k plans and similar workplace retirement accounts while employed, downsizing your home, taking a part-time job in retirement, and delaying Social Security as long as possible, which will allow for higher monthly income when the benefits start. But Zelenka Parsons also sees a contrary problem for some people, especially those entering retirement with large nest eggs. Quote, "They struggle with spending it. They have trouble moving from a saving to a spending mentality," unquote. Retirement thus can be the time to consider not only which people or charities you can help, but also how to spend it on yourself. Zelenka said, quote, "It's time to ask, what did you save it for?" unquote. And that was Russ Wild's article, Don't Ignore the Psychological Aspects of Retirement. Next, we have Trader Joe's Mini Tote Bags Are Coming Back. This was written by Gabe Harui for the USA Today. The beloved mini canvas tote bags are coming back to Trader Joe's. The California-based grocery store chain confirmed to USA Today it has plans to release its mini canvas totes in April at stores across the country. Now, the exact date they will be available in each neighborhood, Trader Joe's, will vary, according to the company statement. The bags will cost $2.99 and will be available in pastel shades of blue, pink, purple, and green, according to the company. The company told the USA Today, quote, if customers have any questions about product availability, they can ask any crew member in their neighborhood store, unquote. In March of 2024, the mini totes became so popular that customers waited in lengthy lines to get their hands on them. Viral videos on TikTok showed frenzies and long lines at the stores, where employees often were forced to limit how many bags the customers could buy. Trader Joe's representative, Nakia Rode, told USA Today back in March of 2024, the mini canvas tote bags certainly sold more quickly than we anticipated. Before we had the opportunity to promote them in any way, customers across the country found them at their neighborhood Trader Joe's. The overwhelming hype led people to list the bags for as much as $500 on online marketplaces like Facebook and eBay. At the time, Trader Joe's made it clear that it was aware of the resellers, adding that it was, quote, done without our approval or authorization and outside the controls of our quality-minded supply chain. And the company continued and said, to be clear, we neither condone nor support the reselling of our products and do all we can to stop the practice, unquote. And that was the article, Trader Joe's Mini Tote Bags Are Coming Back. Our third article from the economy section, Tax Rules for Electronic Payments Get More Complex. This is written by Medora Lee for the USA Today. If you are a freelancer, business owner, or just have a small side hustle, you should know about the new tax requirements this year for electronic payments through Venmo, PayPal, online marketplaces, and some other third-party apps. As part of former President Joe Biden's attempt to ensure that everyone pays their fair share of taxes, Congress lowered, in 2021, the threshold for reporting income on payment apps from $20,000 and 200 transactions annually to $600 for a single transaction. Income at or above those thresholds would trigger a Form 1099-K. That's the report of payments that you received for goods or services during the year. Now, that law was supposed to go into effect in 2022, but it was delayed twice because financial firms complained that it couldn't get its systems ready to send people a 1099-K at that $600 threshold in time to comply. So the Internal Revenue Service decided to phase in the changes. They started with a $5,000 annual threshold in 2024, in $2,500 in 2025, and finally, it'll be $600 in the year 2026 and later. So with the reporting threshold dropping, more people than ever are expected to receive a 1099-K. The question is, what is a 1099-K, and who sends them? Well, the answer, a Form 1099-K, is a report of payments that you got for goods or services during the year from credit or debit or stored valued cards like gift cards or payment cards and some third-party payment apps or online marketplaces like eBay. If your transaction reaches a certain threshold, these firms are required to send you and the IRS a 1099-K. Now note that payment platform Zelle is not included in the list of senders. Personal payments on these apps should not trigger a 1099-K because personal payments are not taxable income. But you need to note these types of payments as non-business in the payment apps when possible. Well, what if you receive a 1099-K that you shouldn't have? So if you receive one that you shouldn't have, you should contact the issuer immediately, according to the IRS. Ask for a corrected form that shows a zero amount. Keep a copy of the original form and all correspondence with the issuer for your records, according to the agency. Now, what happens if I don't report a 1099-K? Well, if you fail to report what's on your 1099-K, you may get audited. A 2017 report by the Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration suggested the IRS underutilize the 1099-K to select tax returns for audit. The IRS said it agreed with the report and it would make a better effort to do something. Well, what if I receive a 1099-K for something that I sold for a loss? If you sold an item for a loss, that's less than what you paid for, you may receive a 1099-K for the amount that you received, but the money is not taxable or deductible. The IRS said you can either report the payment on your tax return at the top of Schedule 1 on Form 1040, or you can report the loss on Form 8949, which carries over to Schedule D for capital gains and losses. If you receive a Form 1099-K for a personal item that's sold at a gain, only the profit is taxable, and you'll need to figure out the profit and report the gain on both Form 8949 and Schedule D. And that was the article, Tax Rules for Electronic Payments Get More Complex. Well, we're at 17 minutes past the hour. We're ready to move on over to the sports section. The cover story on the sports section is entitled, Suns Have Long History of Players with Nike. This was written by Dana Scott for the Arizona Republic. Basketball shoes have a way of telling stories. They can create inflection points for players, sneakerheads, and casual basketball fans. The proper shoe can transcend basketball, influencing fashion and culture. The Phoenix Suns have helped tell those stories through players who have partnered with Nike on signature shoes throughout the years. Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, Jason Kidd, Chris Paul, all current or former Suns players, are among those who have been Nike signature shoe athletes, which involves a line of shoes with various designs. They know how a shoe's design and marketing are just part of this. It also involves a brand legacy, which includes the art of storytelling. Booker, who's a 10-year veteran who has spent his entire career with Phoenix, said, "It's a high standard. It's the highest. It's every kid's dream. It's just been cool to be behind the scenes and seeing the design process, seeing how everything comes together," unquote. Booker's Nike Book Ones sell for $140 a pair, have been on the market since the 2024 Indianapolis All-Star Weekend, after Nike's rollout began in September of 2023. Booker, Durant, Kidd, and Paul are among six players in Phoenix Suns history to have Nike signature shoe deals while they were on the team's roster. The others are former NBA MVPs Charles Barkley and Steve Nash. Overall, 24 current and former NBA players have partnered with Nike on signature shoe deals. Now, that doesn't include exclusive player edition shoes like Booker's Nike Zoom Rev 2017 PE or Suns Ring of Honor inductee Sean Marion's various shoes from the Nike Shox shoe line during the early 2000s. Quote, Nike basketball has had a consistent and prominent presence throughout the Suns' history, which can be traced back to early advertising posters, player edition shoes, and signature athletes, including current players Devin Booker and Kevin Durant, unquote. That was quoted from J. Pavonpera, who is Senior Director of Nike North American Communications. He wrote that in an email to the Arizona Republic. Well, in February, Durant's media company, Boardroom, unveiled his new Nike KD18 Nostalgia Lime Green Teal Orange colorway images on social media. They're scheduled for sale on April 18th, according to the sneaker news outlet Soul Retriever. Durant's Nostalgia is inspired by his hometown Washington D's staple, the Nike Air Terra Humera, for $160 a pair. Now, it's rare for Nike to have multiple active NBA teammates with signature shoes, like Booker and Durant. Dwayne Wade and LeBron James had their respective Jordan brand Fly Wade and LeBron 8 shoes when they were with the Miami Heat back in 2011. Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, and Dennis Rodman had the Air Jordan, the Air Pippen, and the Air Worm Nedstruck, respectively, during the Chicago Bulls' second three-peat title run from 96 to 98. Kids' three-quarter mid Nike Air Zoom Flight 5. Its show was released in 1996 after he was traded from the Dallas Mavericks to the Suns during his third season of his 19-year career. Kidd, who's now the Dallas Mavericks head coach, said to the Republic, quote, "It comes with a lot of responsibility, but it lets you know as a player that you're doing the right thing. As well known as the Suns and as many great players they've had, there's not a lot of players that have had a signature shoe. So that is an honor when you talk about a signature shoe, the brand. You look at Book, great looking shoe. Great player. KD again, great player." Durant's Nike KD shoe line is entering its 18th edition this year. He signed a lifetime deal with Nike in April 2023, 2 months after he was traded from the Brooklyn Nets to Phoenix. His line has been on sale since 2008, which was his second season when he played for the Oklahoma City Thunder. Durant said, "I don't take it for granted. It's amazing. It's a huge responsibility, and you try to show how much you appreciate it by going out there and being the best professional you could be every single day and representing everybody, because these stories are going to last forever." Charles Barkley's Air Force Max CB made him the Suns' first signature shoe athlete back in 1993, the same year that he was the league's MVP and led Phoenix to the NBA Finals that year during his first season with the team. Nash's Nike Trash Talk shoes were made from manufactured waste to raise environmental awareness and were digitally marketed online only in 2008, 2 years after his back-to-back MVP years with the Suns. Now, Chris Paul had 13 annual editions of his CP3 line under Nike's Jordan brand from 2008 to 2020, including the line's final shoe, Jordan CP3 XIII. And that was when he was traded to the Suns in 2020 and led the team to its third NBA Finals appearance in the 2020-2021 season. In 2018, Paul said about his shoe line, quote, "It's such an honor and a privilege. We all know what the brand stands for. It stands for excellence. For me, I love sneakers and the whole process of it," unquote. Then he also mentioned that how the story is what makes the shoe. It's not just the technology and the materials to build it. The Booker, Durant, Kidd, and Paul shoe lines are part of the Nike Zoom Air basketball shoe series, which started back in 1995. Nike Zoom Air technology involves a pressurized air bubble in the sole to offer a lightweight feeling as it absorbs impact and Nike React foam cushioning. It's designed to respond on hardwood courts or a field with a carbon fiber midfoot shank plate to help pitch the person's motion forward. Russ Bengston, a former Slam magazine editor-in-chief and author of the book A History of Basketball in 15 Sneakers, he told the Republic the Air Jordan 11, designed by Tinker Hatfield and back in 1995, pioneered every modern basketball shoe. It was the first to have a full-length carbon fiber plate in the sole, which had previously been used primarily in aviation and motorsports. Kidd's Zoom shoe also contributed to Nike basketball shoe evolution over the past 30 years. Bengston said, quote, "The flight shoe was always seen as the guard's shoe, and the force stuff was the big man's shoe. It kind of made sense when you figure someone like Jason Kidd is going to be on the balls of his feet most of the time. You don't need this huge cushioning in the heel because his whole game is pushing the ball ahead and moving forward and cutting to the basket. I think that shoe is kind of a precursor to some of that Kobe Bryant shoe line stuff where you're going lower, you're going lighter." Kidd's Air Zoom Flight 5 was designed like a sprint track spike shoe. It had protrusions on the outsole, circles on the forefoot to emulate and propel Kidd's lightning speed style of play. It included a rounded incandescent lens on the outer sole near the pinky toe. Kidd said, quote, "I thought the shoe was important because it was more of a track shoe, and it helped my game to be quick and also just the equipment. That was an important part. I never had feet problems. They were cool. I think they were ahead of their time with the sunglass lens, so it was very, very cool," unquote. Booker has more than 20 colorways of his low-cut Book One shoe, similar to the soccer-inspired low-cut Nike Kobe 4, which was released in 2008. Booker said his shoe traces other classic Nike models, including 1980s Air Jordan 1, the Airship, the Air Force 1, and Nike's original basketball high-top blazer from back in 1973. The Book One includes his Arizona-centric Flagstaff and Sedona editions and the 1995 All-Star editions to honor that year's Phoenix All-Star Game and Hall of Famers like Reggie Miller, who frequently wears Booker's shoes. Booker said, quote, "That means the world to me. Those guys paved the way for me. So the big part of the Book One was paying homage to and showing love for the heritage that started this game. Even flipping colorways that have been seen in the past that made us all fall in love with Nike, just want to pay homage to them and tell those storylines to the next generation that might not know about it." Unquote. Well, Durant told the Republic that his previous shoe formations were derived from many of his Nike signature athlete predecessors, which includes former Orlando Magic and Suns guard Anfernee Hardaway's Nike Air Max Penny 1 and 3 editions. Then there was Michael Jordan's Air Jordans 1, 3, 4, and 7. LeBron James' first shoe, the Nike Air Zoom generation back in 2003. Carmelo Anthony's Jordan Melo in 1.5. And Gary Payton's Nike Air Zoom Flight The Glove. Booker said about Durant, quote, "I'm invested in his line. I grew up rocking all of his shoes, so it's a privilege," unquote. And that was the article entitled, "Suns Have Long History of Players with Nike." Well, let's turn and look at some articles in the interior of the sports section. Here's one about baseball. Burns debuts in Yankee Stadium. Arizona's season opening series against the Chicago Cubs concludes Sunday. The Diamondbacks head out on the road to New York for a three-game set against the Yankees beginning Tuesday, followed by a three-game series in Washington over the weekend against the Nationals. Prized off-season acquisition Colin Burns will make his Diamondbacks debut on Tuesday. Though Yankee Stadium can be a tough ballpark for right-handed pitchers, Burns has not had any trouble there in his career. He has started there twice, once in 2023 and once last year, and he's given up just one run in combined 13 innings with three walks and 16 strikeouts. The Diamondbacks will see a familiar face in pinstripes for the first time, Paul Goldschmidt, who was the face of the Diamondbacks franchise for more than a half decade. He signed a one-year deal with the Yankees over the winter and was New York's starting first baseman on opening day. When they face the Nationals, the Diamondbacks will try to extend a run of success against them. Since the start of 2023, the Diamondbacks are 10-2 against the Nationals, having gone 5-1 each year. And that's the article, Burns Debuts in Yankee Stadium. Well, we're at 30 minutes past the hour. We probably ought to move on over to the viewpoint section of the paper and read some opinion pieces. At the top of the editorial page, there is a big picture of Representative Raul Grijalva. And underneath that picture, running from border to border, is the title of Elvia Diaz's opinion piece, I Wish I Had Grasped Representative Grijalva's Legacy Sooner. Here's what she wrote. I should have grasped the depth and inspirational mission of Raul Grijalva sooner. That feeling of regret came crashing down on Wednesday as I watched the funeral mass of the Southern Arizona congressman. He died on March 13th at age 77. I've known about his legislative work and his personal struggles or flaws, as political rivals would call them. But it will be Grijalva's essence, the cultural heritage that he personified, and the causes he relentlessly pursued that will be hard to replace. Whoever takes over his seat in Congress later this year will have a huge void to fill, not in the halls of Capitol Hill, but in the hearts and minds of the people of this border region and beyond. Deb Haaland, Secretary of the Interior under former President Joe Biden, said, quote, we mourn the loss of a voice of conscience, unquote. Haaland paid tribute to Grijalva as a powerful advocate for tribal communities and a fighter for environmental justice. That was especially touching because the plight of indigenous communities is often forgotten, at best, with few willing to spend political capital to stand with them. Arizona has 22 federally recognized tribes, but it was clear that Grijalva's sympathy for Native Americans had no boundaries. The son of Mexican immigrants first got into politics with the Raza United Party, part of the Chicano movement that sought political representation by staging boycotts, protests, and walkouts. Some at the time called them violent, though Chicanos rejected that characterization. Grijalva later toned down his most radical instincts, but the movement's political culture stayed with him and apparently guided him throughout his long career, advocating for immigrants' rights, environmental protections, public education, and expanded health care. Grijalva, a Democrat who served 13 years on the Tucson Unified School District Governing Board back in the 70s and 80s, he later served as a Pima County Supervisor for 14 years, where he was instrumental in launching the county's Sonoran Desert Conservation Plan. He began serving in Congress in 2023 and quickly aligned himself with the left wing of the Democratic Party, a stance that he carried until his passing. Grijalva was an unapologetic liberal who was never afraid to make good trouble, or necessary trouble, as the late U.S. Representative John Lewis used to say. He wasn't afraid to call for an economic boycott against Arizona after the state implemented the anti-immigrant Senate Bill 1070, or to get arrested while protesting outside Trump Tower in New York in 2017. His challenges included notorious alcohol use and an ethics complaint by a former female staffer over creating a hostile workplace, which ended with a $48,000 settlement. None of that should minimize his lifelong work, which should be judged in its totality. Grijalva was an everyman in service, as my colleague E.J. Montini put it. And as U.S. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez told those gathered at his funeral, quote, he leaves us a legacy of a mentor and tireless champion for the unseen and overlooked. Anyone charismatic enough to gain public support can go to Congress, but not everyone has the heart and affinity to put people first over their own financial and political ambitions. Too many go to Washington to forge their own fortunes, quickly forgetting who sent them there and why. The list is growing of those who are considering a bid to replace Grijalva. Governor Katie Hobbs has set a special primary election for July 15th and the general election for September 23rd to fill the vacancy. The 7th Congressional District covers parts of Tucson and southwestern Arizona and cuts a bit into the West Valley. Former State Representative Daniel Hernandez has launched his candidacy. Others are expected to compete for the seat. The hardest part about Grijalva's death is not filling his seat. Whoever wins surely will put up a fight in Washington to represent the predominantly Latino district. What Southern Arizona lost with Grijalva is a sliver of the Chicano movement that grew out of the desperate need for representation and a fight for a sense of belonging. We don't have to like the tactics of the movement that jump-started Grijalva's trajectory to appreciate the struggles and cultural contributions of Mexican Americans. Grijalva leaves a void that I doubt anyone can fill. And that was Elvia Diaz's opinion piece, "I Wish I Had Grasped Representative Grijalva's Legacy Sooner." Our second article, or opinion piece, is written by Phil Boas, who is a columnist for the Arizona Republic. Signal chat fiasco will hurt Trump more than he knows. Do not underestimate the crisis that has seized the White House and exposed virtually everyone in the highest echelon of the Trump administration. This is an unforgivable breakdown of national leadership, a revelation of such breathtaking incompetence that it will demand months of wrenching and painful examination, and heads will roll. If that isn't clear to you now, you are not a serious person, and you should probably sit this one out. Only a month ago, February 19th, Google warned that the Signal messaging app had become a target of Russian espionage. And yet, on March 15th, Donald Trump's vice president, secretary of state, national security advisor, secretary of defense, director of national intelligence, and chief White House aide were on Signal discussing an impending U.S. military attack on Iran-backed Houthi rebels in Yemen. Quote, "precise information about weapons packages, targets, and timing," unquote, were shared, wrote Atlantic editor Jeffrey Goldberg, whom the White House Signal Working Group had inadvertently and recklessly invited to their secret text conversation. It was all so sloppy and mind-blowing that the freelance journalist Aaron Rupar tweeted on X, which is formerly Twitter, quote, "it's like Watergate. Only in this version, Nixon directly mails the tapes to Woodward and Bernstein," unquote. Battle details were precise enough that Goldberg sat in his chair in a supermarket parking lot at 1:45 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, waiting for the invasion to begin. He wrote, quote, "if this Signal chat was real, I reasoned Houthi targets would soon be bombed. At about 1:55, I checked X and searched Yemen. Explosions were then being heard across Sana'a, the capital city," unquote. Well, by using a private, unsecure app to convey what should have been highly classified information like exact details and time, these leaders put at risk the lives of U.S. pilots, soldiers, and sailors. The breach is serious enough that it will sow doubt among the 2.1 million men and women who serve in the U.S. military. If the civilian leadership that oversees the military is this flip with their lives, why should they ever trust them again? But that's not all that was exposed. We now see in greater clarity how bad character at the top infects everybody down the chain. It wasn't reckless enough to text U.S. war plans as if they were the swim and shuffleboard lineup on the Love Boat, being punctuated with peppy little flame and flag emojis. But when it was exposed, those Trump officials denied and lied and prevaricated, all while smearing the journalist who exposed them. Let's begin at the top. Donald Trump's reaction to all of this was to throw his inner circle under the bus. If at one time in American history the buck stopped at the president's desk, it decidedly does not in the age of Trump. Trump said when asked about the Atlantic bombshell, quote, "I don't know anything about it." And then he went on the attack, quote, "I'm not a big fan of the Atlantic. To me, it's a magazine that's going out of business, but I know nothing about it," unquote. Well, if this sounded familiar, it was Trump's same reaction a week ago when the administration was under fire for using the controversial Alien Enemies Act to ship undocumented immigrants to Venezuela. His first reflex was to deny and then throw his Secretary of State under the bus. Trump said, quote, "I don't know when it was signed because I didn't sign it. Other people handled it. But Marco Rubio has done a great job, and he wanted them out, and we go along with that," unquote. Well, if you ever wondered where the buck stops in the Trump administration, it stops down the street at Foggy Bottom, the U.S. State Department. With the Goldberg Atlantic story wreaking damage on the White House, Trump went into denial. He told NBC News it is, quote, "the only glitch in 2 months," unquote, of his new administration. And then he said, quote, "and it turned out not to be a serious one," unquote. He told Newsmax that he believes it was a staffer who made the mistake. Quote, "what it was, we believe, is somebody that was on the line with permission, somebody that worked for National Security Advisor Mike Waltz at a lower level," unquote. Trump also lashed out at Goldberg. Quote, "I happen to know the guy is a total sleazebag," unquote. This was exactly the posture Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth struck. Attack the messenger. Hegseth said, "so, you're talking about a deceitful and highly discredited so-called journalist who has made a profession of peddling hoaxes? This is a guy that peddles in garbage," unquote. He said this after the White House had acknowledged the Atlantic story was accurate. It was too much for Hegseth's old Fox News colleague and fellow conservative Britt Hume, who tweeted this on X, quote, "oh, for God's sake, the administration has already confirmed the authenticity of the message," unquote. Later, Hegseth lied and said, quote, "nobody was texting war plans," unquote. Now, to know that's a lie, you can go and read for yourself the Hegseth text messages, which The Atlantic subsequently published. Knowing that Hegseth lied, we also know that White House Press Secretary Carolyn Leavitt misled when she tweeted this, "Jeffrey Goldberg is well known for his sensationalist spin. Here are the facts about his latest story. Number one, no war plans were discussed. No, number two, no classified material were sent to the thread," unquote. Well, already scheduled to appear before the Senate Intelligence Committee, Director of National Intelligence Tulsi Gabbard and CIA Director John Ratcliffe took their proctology exams under oath. Both insisted the Signal chat group did not include classified information. But Republican U.S. Senator Tom Cotton stepped in to save their bacon. Cotton said, quote, "they testified. Now, it's on my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, that there's no intelligence community classified information, as opposed to military. Is that correct?" Gabbard and Ratcliffe agreed they were referring specifically to the intelligence community, according to the Washington Post Aaron Blake. The most loathsome response came from National Security Advisor Mike Waltz, who started by smearing Goldberg and calling him vile. Quote, "I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but of all the people out there, somehow this guy who has lied about the president, who's lied to Gold Star families, lied to their attorneys, and gone to Russia hoax, gone to just all kinds of lengths to lie and smear the president of the United States, and he's the one that somehow gets on somebody's contact and then gets sucked into this group," unquote. Later, he told Fox News, quote, "we've got the best technical minds looking at how this happened, but I can tell you for 100%, I don't know this guy. I know him by his horrible reputation, and he really is the bottom scum of journalists," unquote. Well, by March 25th, Waltz would take full responsibility for accidentally including the Atlantic reporter in the chat. He said, quote, "I built the group. My job is to make sure everything's coordinated," unquote. He also contradicted the president. Quote, a staffer wasn't responsible, unquote, that he told Laura Ingraham and Vice Fox News. Try to imagine that you were the vice president, the secretary of state, the secretary of defense, the director of national intelligence, the chief White House aide who has been left dangling in the wind this week because the president's most important advisor on national security cannot set up a chat room. Heads will roll, or this administration can limp the next 4 years to completion. And that was Phil Boas's opinion piece. Signal chat fiasco will hurt Trump more than he knows. We're coming up on 46 minutes past the hour, so we're going to move on over to the entertainment section. We're going to begin by reading today's horoscopes. We will begin with the sign of Aries, birth dates from March 21st to April 19th. There is an immense shift in the skies. New dreams are revealed. For Taurus, birth dates from April 20th to May 20th, the first steps of a life-changing spiritual journey begin today. Surrender an outdated ego. For Geminis, birth dates from May 21st to June 21st, friends come and friends go. Part of your network dissolves to create a new one. For Cancer, birth dates from June 22nd through July 22nd, material ambition may no longer motivate you in your life's direction. Change starts today. For Leos, birth dates from July 23rd through August 22nd, paths open to expand your mind. All the potential may feel overwhelming. For you fellow Virgos out there, birth dates from August 23rd through September 22nd, the caverns of the mind and spirit are appealing. For Libra, September 23rd through October 23rd birth dates, your relationships are becoming spiritual. Your honesty and compassion are tested with others. For Scorpios, October 24th through November 21st birth dates, take the initiative to be of service. Your skills are to be put to good use. For Sagittarius, November 22nd through December 21st birth dates, pleasure centers, fires up, inspired by an overwhelming surge of passion running through your veins. For Capricorns, December 22nd to January 19th birth dates, reimagine your foundation, create your dream home. For Aquarius, January 20th to February 18th birth dates, your mind may become inspired and overwhelmed simultaneously. Finally, Pisces, birth dates from February 19th to March 20th. Clearly knowing what you value may be tricky. And that was today's horoscopes. We turn now to letters of advice written by Abigail Van Buren in her column, Dear Abby. The first letter goes like this. Dear Abby, I am recently separated, and my divorce will be final soon. I have met a woman I didn't even know could exist. She's perfect for me. The problem is she lives an hour and a half away and can't drive at night due to medical condition. I have fallen for her, and it is mutual. The issues are the distance and the fact that her father just passed away. She's a widow living with her toxic mother. We both want this to work, but she needs time and space. I'm willing to give it to her because I believe she is totally worth it. This is the second serious relationship in my life. My ex and I were together for decades, but among other bad things, she cheated on me. I'm wondering if you have some advice for me. This new woman is my true unicorn. I would do anything for her. I want to be with her. She says the same, but even though her mother is toxic, she doesn't seem to want to leave her and the bad situation she's in. It's early, I know, but I'm willing to wait. We have so much in common. She hasn't asked for anything except time and space, but I'm almost 40. She's a little older. I'm so clueless with relationships. I'm scared and excited. We want to be a family with a home. Please help me out here. Signed, Confused in South Carolina. And Abby responds, "Dear Confused, you need to summon enough patience for all of this to play out. You are still married, and frankly, you need time to regain your balance after a bad marriage that lasted decades. While I'm sure your unicorn is a very special woman, she needs time to grieve her father's death and to decide whether she wants to live apart from her mother, who, let's face it, may always be a part of the package deal. Happiness and excitement are intoxicating. Do not act impetuously. Take this very slowly. Those long, inconvenient drives may help you gain perspective. With time, if this is as right as you are hoping it will be, you will have the happy ending you are hoping for." Our next letter goes, "Dear Abby, my friend invites me for dinner often, and I keep coming up with vague excuses about why I cannot come. The reason for my reluctance is her poor kitchen hygiene. The fridge always has old food and spillage, and her kitchen counters and sink are littered with dirty dishes and leftovers. She doesn't wash her hands before cooking either. I've helped her clean her kitchen many times while visiting, thinking she just perhaps needed some guidance, but her old habits stick. It feels awkward and inappropriate to tell her the reason for my continuous cancellations. How would you proceed? Signed, Friend in a Sticky Situation." And Abby responds, "Dear friend, you are not going to change her. The way to handle this would be to invite her over to your place for dinner, agree to have your meals at a restaurant, or bring carryout to her place." And we end with a note from Abby to my Muslim readers. "At sundown, it is time for the breaking of the Ramadan fast. Happy Eid al-Fitr, everyone. Signed, Love, Abby." And those were the letters of advice written by Abigail Van Buren. Now it's time for some comics. In the comic strip Beetle Bailey, drawn by Greg Bryan and Neil Walker, in the first frame, General Halftrack is sitting at his desk thinking to himself, "Maybe it's time for me to retire and spend my remaining days at home." And the next frame, an officer comes in and says, "I brought your lunch, sir." And she's got a tray with a drink and a sandwich on it. And the next frame, there's Lieutenant Fuzz. "I polished your golf club, sir." And in the next frame, there's two guys sitting in front of his desk, and it says, "We're here from Hurleyburg Vets. We want to give you an honorary dinner." And the next frame, he's holding a phone, and we hear from the phone, "Don't you dare forget to pick up the laundry on your way home, and don't be late." And in the last frame, as he walks out the door, his secretary says, "I cleared your schedule for golf, sir." And he thinks, "You know, maybe I should rethink retirement." And that was Beetle Bailey. Then we turn to Blondie, drawn by Dean Young and John Marshall. In the first frame, Dagwood is asleep on the couch, and a voice from off the screen, out of the room, says, "Honey, would you mind looking at some tile samples for our kitchen floor with me?" And Dagwood thinks, "Tile samples?" Well, the next frame, here comes Blondie into the sofa, and he's gone. And she says, "It looks like he made a break for it, Daisy." "Lead the way, girl." And Daisy is sniffing on the floor and sniffing. In the next frame, they're going around the house. And Daisy all of a sudden stops and barks at this door. And in the last frame, turns out Dagwood is in the closet. And Dagwood says to Daisy, "So you're identifying as a bloodhound these days." That was Blondie. In the comic strip Pickles, drawn by Brian Crane, the first frame, here's Earl, and he says, "Opal, did you take my socks?" She's sitting on the couch. Cat's laying on the top of the couch behind her. She's knitting. She says, "No." And Earl says, "Well, they were right here a minute ago. Why would I take..." And she says, "Why would I take your stinky old socks?" And he says, you must have done something with them. And she says, I didn't touch them. He goes, well, then who did? And in the last frame, the cat thinks, I buried them in the litter box. You're welcome. And that was Pickles. And in Baby Blues, drawn by Rick Kirkman and Jerry Scott, in the first frame, it's a big frame. There's Hammy. He's got a towel around his waist. And he yells, Auga. And then he goes, Arg. And he's got a, looks like a sword or a stick in his hand. And he's fighting off animals drawn on the wall. And then he throws the stick. And finally, he climbs up on the sofa and he says, I would have made a good caveman. And his big sister Zoe says, oh, yeah? Why? Because you know the language? Because you act like a savage? Because you smell like a woolly mammoth? And he goes, no. And he leans back on a pillow and says, I just really like not wearing undies. And Zoe goes, Mom! And that was Baby Blues. Well, it's time for us to wish some celebrities a happy birthday. Who is having a birthday today? The actor John Astin turns 95. The actor and director Warren Beatty turns 88. Singer and guitarist Eric Clapton turns 80. Singer Jim Mangrum, known as Dandy Mangrum, from Black Oak, Arkansas, turns 77. Actor and comedian Paul Reiser turns 69. Rapper MC Hammer turns 63. Singer Tracy Chapman turns 61. Singer Celine Dion turns 57. And Mark Consuelos turns 54. I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona, and you have been listening to the second hour of the reading of the Arizona Republic for Sunday, the last Sunday in March, March 30th, 2025. I hope you have a great day today. I hope you enjoy the following weeks. Bye-bye.